family. The clerk made him a pizza and some chicken wings, and the man left. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and we're going to talk about a couple of hot-button issues on the Knowing the Truth radio program today. Wednesday is our Worldview Wednesday edition. So we typically carve out that time and space to do that, talk about some things that are happening in our country or in our world today, and then look at them and look at them from a biblical perspective. On the first part of the program, we are normally joined by somebody from World Magazine, and we'll be doing that today. We'll be joined by Daniel James Devine, will be our guest today. He's a reporter with World Magazine. And I want to talk to Daniel specifically about an article that he wrote about a disturbing aspect of the new gun legislation that's being proposed, the gun control legislation, I should say. Daniel wrote a very interesting piece about entitled "The Violently Ill," and the subtitle of it under a science section. He writes for the science subjects there for World Magazine. He says it's a mistake to presume mental disorders and violence go hand in hand. There's also some new stories out about this that I want to talk to Daniel about. But just yesterday, I was reading about a story in the New York gun law that requires that mental health professionals report any person they consider, quote, likely to engage in conduct that would result in serious harm to self or others, unquote. And supposedly that if they do not report this concern and something does happen involving the person, such as a shooting, the mental health professional could face charges for not reporting the person's behavior to law enforcement. Well, that opens up a can of worms here. It opens up a can of worms as to what mental health issues are, who is actually mentally disturbed, and now you've got people, they just need to think that you're mentally disturbed, and if they don't report it, that they could be held accountable. So is there now going to be over-reporting of these issues? Will they take a minor incident that takes place, and then will they say, well, this is could be a mental health problem? For instance, some people suffer with anxiety, and they've had anxiety attacks. Well, would that now fall under the idea, would that be put in your file that you have a mental health issue and now therefore you're not going to be allowed to own a firearm? So it's really opening up quite a can of worms. And, of course, in the president's statements and his 23 executive orders that he put out, remember one of them was to clarify that health professionals have an obligation to find out if there is guns in the home. So can you imagine you go in to get your ankle checked on for a sprained ankle, and in the middle of the evaluation, the doctor looks up at you and says, hey, by the way, any firearms in the house? You know, it's like, well, what does that have to do with anything? Just look at my ankle here and give me the expensive bill at the end and I'll be out of here. That type of thing. But so we're going to talk about that on the first part of the program, and we're going to use Daniel's article there as our outline of our discussion. On the second part of the program today, we're going to take up another hot-button issue, and we're going to look at the idea of vaccines. I'm going to be joined by Barbara Fisher. She's the president of the National Vaccine Information Center, and I want to talk with her about what's taking place specifically with the flu vaccine. We're hearing a lot again about the flu shot. But there's also some other very disturbing trends that are taking place with vaccines as well. I'm going to talk a little bit about children immunization schedules. We're going to talk a little bit about the role of government now in pushing these vaccines upon people, withholding various benefits. If you don't, if you're not vaccinated, then you can't receive certain benefits from the government. And there's a brand new push by the government at the state level. And so we're going to talk about these things on the second half of the program. Let's go ahead and start with Daniel on the top of the program here. Daniel, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, thanks for having me.
Daniel, tell our listeners a little bit of what you wrote there in your article called Violently Ill.
Well, what I looked at was whether there's a connection between mental illness and violence. As kind of we've been hearing during this whole gun debate, there's been talk of, well, why don't we just pass some common sense gun control laws, to really try to keep guns out of the hands of people who are mentally ill. And kind of what I'm hearing from the research is that the connection between mental illness and violence, though there may be a small connection there, it's probably not as large as we might think. And it's actually pretty hard to predict whether a person who's mentally ill is likely, more likely than the average person, to commit violence. And, you know, I hadn't heard about that New York gun law until you just mentioned it, and that is, well, it's really surprising.
Mm. That article that you wrote on this actually shows that both sides of the aisle, both liberals and conservatives, and since reading your article, the idea of mental illness has jumped out in a lot of the interviews that I've watched surrounding this issue. And you even mentioned in the beginning of your article that the National Rifle Association chief executive, Wayne LaPierre, he suggests that the United States have an active national database on the mentally ill. So this isn't just a left-wing conspiracy or something that's taking place. This is just the general thinking of people today, left and right, that, you know, something more needs to be done with the mentally ill, and the mentally ill are the people that are responsible for all of these types of violent acts that we see taking place.
Yeah, and you know what the research that I saw, what psychiatrists will say, is that drug and alcohol abuse is a much much more accurate predictor of whether somebody will commit a violent act somewhere along the line, whereas mental illness is sort of a hit and miss sort of thing. As a psychiatrist examining someone, you can maybe see some warning signs of whether they might do something violent based on, you know, what they say or whatever, but overall, it's just really hard to predict of whether a particular person is going to commit a crime like that. Hmm. So to just label everybody who has a mental illness as, you know, somebody who's potentially violent or more likely to be violent is, I think, maybe doing a disservice to them. And I think from a Christian perspective, one of the things that kind of concerns me a little bit is, are we going to, you know, start looking down or sort of labeling everybody who has a mental illness as being potentially violent, as being, you know, do we want to be afraid of them, or should we have compassion for them and be looking for ways to help them, as opposed to, you know, just giving them a label on top of the problems that they're already facing?
Hmm. I was just reading an article, as you mentioned there just a moment ago, that maybe we should be looking at the medications that are being prescribed. There's a story this morning. I read it out on sermonaudio.com, but it says a top psychiatrist says that meds are behind the school massacres. It goes on in the article to say this: if lawmakers and authorities are truly concerned about stopping gun violence in schools, they need to take a close look at the prescription drugs for children and young people, says a leading psychiatrist. In an exclusive interview, his name is Dr. David Healy, criticized pharmaceutical companies that have made billions of dollars marketing selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors known as SSRIs. He says that these drugs prescribed for school children cause violent behavior. So he's actually saying that these drugs may be more responsible for this type of violence that we see today, rather than just this really broad category, as you point out in your article, of just being mentally ill.
Yeah, you know, that's really interesting. I was hearing the other day a little bit about that, something along those lines, and I would like to actually look into it and you know, find out if there's a consensus among at least a small group of doctors to where they view a lot of these prescription drugs as maybe even having a side effect that is related to violence. I don't know, but it's certainly pretty interesting subject to look into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would like to know, and I haven't picked up on this yet, as to how many of the recent mass shootings that have taken place. I think the number is as high as 9 out of 10 of these school shootings that have taken place, that there was a significant proportion of drug use by the person that committed the crime. And I think it's not just drug use. I think we're talking about prescribed drugs. So the person were on these types of SSRIs or other similar type of drug, and they know that a lot of these types of drugs, it's been proven, the evidence is there, that these things do cause violent behavior. So I think that really looking at this would certainly be helpful. Now, you point out in your article then that I think you have a person at the age of 19 that began experiencing some panic attacks. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, just a dangerous path that this could be for us to go down if we just start all of a sudden thinking that every person with a quote-unquote mental disorder is somehow trigger-happy and we need to treat them that way.
Yeah. There's a guy named David Levine who's a science journalist, and he was writing on the Scientific American's website, sort of a guest blog post, and he was just being honest about his own mental disorder that he's been diagnosed with, which is panic disorder, and he described some of the experiences that he had with this panic disorder. And apparently, some of the symptoms he was having was he woke up and just had this sort of sense of impending doom, like he was afraid that he was going to die, and he didn't understand why. And I think there was some. I think he may have been overseas. There was, you know, some transition in his life that had probably triggered it. But at any rate, he had these feelings of just terror and panic, and he writes that. When I had a panic attack, I thought that I was dying. I wanted to be brought to a hospital, and the furthest thing from my mind was being violent. He never had any desire to go out and shoot somebody just because he had these strange thoughts that were coming to his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way, a lot of people who deal with mental disorders, you know, they're struggling in different ways, but you know, a desire to take a gun out and shoot somebody is not necessarily what they're thinking and feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of people who get mental disorders at some point in their life is pretty high. I forget the exact number. I want to say it's like 1 in 3 or something along those lines. But I mean, if you add together all the different kinds of mental illnesses there are, I mean, you've got depression, you've got you know, even on the, sort of the lower end of the scale, ADD and ADHD, all these different kinds of disorders that people have, to lump them all together and say, you know, well, somebody with a mental disorder is more likely to be violent. It's not accurate, and what psychiatrists say is that the evidence just does not point to that.
Mm-hmm. It seems that this could be certainly a backdoor to gun control. That, like you say, that categories are very many that fall under the idea of mental health issues. the president then kind of opening up this door by saying that medical professionals have an obligation or some sort of role to play in by issuing that executive order, and specifically mentioning that, you know, that this clarifies their role in this. I don't think it's too far of a stretch to start thinking about some of the problems that could flow from this. You talked about many, many categories, everything from ADHD and so forth, as being could fall under the idea of mental health issues. You could just imagine that a number of people could be excluded from owning a firearm for some of these types of issues that certainly have little or no connection whatsoever to any sort of violent behavior. I think another thing that could happen here, too, is especially if you're now tasking doctors to do this upon the threat of lawsuit or some, you know, even being considered to commit a crime if you don't report it, there certainly could be a lot of over-reporting by these folks. I mean, why would they take the chance? They would do better to go ahead and report it rather than, you know, not report it and then find out that person does do some sort of a violent act that they could also be some way liable for. So I really think that this is rather disturbing to see the way that the issue that took place there at Sandy Hook, the knee-jerk reactions and the overreaching by the government in this case, and where this could lead in the very near future.
Yeah, it is disturbing. The New York law that you were just talking about is disturbing in that sense. There was actually a case recently in someplace in Europe, I think it was France, where a doctor, I believe it was a psychiatrist, was actually convicted because a patient of his actually went out and committed a crime. I believe he'd committed murder, and his doctor was actually held to blame because of just the way he handled the case, the way he handled the patient. So a doctor was blamed for his patient's crime, and, you know, certainly if we think that if we're going to start holding doctors accountable for the for what their patients do, I mean, it seems like a real slippery slope of where that could lead to. And I quoted a psychiatry professor from Duke University in the article that I wrote. His name is Jeffrey Swanson, but what he said was, psychiatrists using clinical judgment are not much better than chance at predicting which individual patients will do something violent and which will not.
Hmm.
So even these psychiatrists, this is what they do and what they study for a living. You know, they say it's just impossible to always predict when somebody's going to do something like this.
Hmm. I'm not sure about the recent shooter there at Sandy Hook, but the Aurora Theater shooter, he was, I think, was that Lanza? I get the names confused, but he was on some sort of drugs. And I don't know if you remember, but there was a lot of talk when that took place about whether or not he had actually been meeting with a psychiatrist. They were trying to find the name of the psychiatrist, and there was a lot of information in the news about that relationship and whether or not they would be able to find out if he had made threatening statements or these types of things. So I don't think that this is much of a, it's not a conspiracy theory. There's a lot of pieces here, I think, that could lead somebody to very quickly conclude that this could be some way, a little bit of a backdoor way of limiting the guns that are in our society today, and as well as, just opening up a can of worms about bringing medical professionals into this whole discussion about guns. Daniel, in that article, how did you end that off in the article, or what's basically the conclusion that we should think about as you were writing about that issue?
Well, one of the things that I concluded with was that, you know, overall we don't want to view the mentally ill as, being somebody who's a threat to us necessarily. Certainly there are some mentally ill people who, you know, do have violent tendencies, and I think those that we see those violent tendencies, you know, we do have to be careful and just have common sense in those cases. But actually, in some of these instances where guys go out and do commit a mass murder, doctors say that actually they sometimes will drop hints or comments of what they're going to do in conversations or in online forums, because what these people do is they'll actually rehearse the crime that they want to commit in their minds over and over for months or maybe even years in advance. And as Christians, that should be no surprise to us, because Jesus taught that murder, along with other sins, is something that it comes out of the heart. It springs out of the heart. You know, it's not something that comes from a physical condition, but it's something that comes from the sin that's within all of us. And so, as Christians, I think we can have some discernment to be watching out for that and not blame everything on a mental illness, but understand that it really comes from our root spiritual condition.
Mm. Daniel, excellent point. I think two points there. One is that we've got to be very careful about viewing people that have mental health issues with suspicion or with fear and not with compassion. You know, when people are struggling with depression or some other type of issue dealing with the mind, you know, we're called as Christians to reach out to people like this. I believe in biblical counseling, and helping people to work through their problems is a major element of being in the ministry, and I think that that's very important. And if we suddenly, you know, feel that everyone that has any sort of issue in these broad categories, that immediately we begin to view them with suspicion and even fear in some cases, that is going to hinder our ability in the church to reach out to them with compassion and with the gospel and helping them understand how to apply the Word of God. Thinking is a major aspect of the Christian life. I went to a conference last year by Ligonier Ministries, and it was all about the Christian mind, about us thinking through the gospel and what great ramifications that has for Christian living. And then the second thing, as you mentioned there, I think is very insightful. The idea that it's, we live in a blame-shifting society, and in this blame-shifting, we're always looking for somewhere to put this blame. I nobody seems to talk about the person that pulled the trigger just as being a sinful individual, for maybe they were bitter over something or angry and they didn't handle that right. And we know that man has a fallen nature, and so we certainly need to take that into consideration in all of these things as well. Daniel, your final word?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think one of the things as a culture that we're just afraid to do is point out, you know, the people who commit these crimes are committing just a heinous evil. And to try to blame that on, you know, some sort of medical condition is, it's not an approach that comes from a biblical worldview, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, Daniel, thank you so much for writing this article. It's one of the few sites that I saw that was picking up on this issue, and I think it's going to be something that's certainly going to be in the news and a debate that's going to take place in our culture here for some time to come. So thank you so much for your work there with World Magazine, and thank you to World Mag in general, because you guys are doing just an excellent job.
Thanks. Appreciate it so much.
Okay. That was Daniel James Devine, or James Daniel Devine. I always get his name goofed up. But Daniel to us. Daniel James Devine, that's what it is. And I want to thank him for writing this article. It's a very important and, I think, well-stated article. You can read it out on worldmag.com. That's www.worldmag.com in order to find out all of the articles that Daniel's written about and read this one in its entirety. We're going to be joined in just a couple minutes by Barbara Fisher from the National Center for Vaccine Information. We'll talk about that in a few minutes.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
How much much do you know about church history? On the next Janet Mefford Show, Dr. Robert Godfrey, president of Westminster Seminary, California, will give us an overview of how God has built and preserved his church in history. It's during our Ligonier Sound Doctrine Hour. And how have President Obama's policies contributed to the Algeria jihad attack? Jihad Watch director Robert Spencer will join me to explain all that and more next time on the Janet Mefford Show.
Today at 3 on Christian Talk 660 and 92.9 FM.
Since the revolution of the 1960s, the moral revolution, we have two nations of people trying to live side by side with radically opposing sets of values and belief systems. The Apostle Paul tells us we're not wrestling against flesh and blood, but against powers and forces and spiritual wickedness in high places. It's a spiritual battle that requires spiritual arms and equipment to be engaged in it. In a few months, we're going to be gathering together thousands of Christians in Orlando. And the title of this coming conference is No Compromise. And we have a marvelous cast of speakers assembled for this event. We have Sinclair Ferguson, we have Dr. Bob Godfrey, we have Steve Lawson, R.C. Sproul Jr., Alistair Begg, and Ravi Zacharias, and even Cal Thomas. And so I urge you to come and stand with us and stand together, bearing witness to the kingdom of God.
When BNC Cleaners opened in 1959, they promised their customers quality and convenience with a friendly and knowledgeable staff without taking them to the cleaners on price. And today, BNC Cleaners is still satisfying customers, carrying through with that promise. They're in Greenville on Wade Hampton Boulevard at Church Street and at Hillcrest Cleaners in Simpsonville behind the Coach House restaurant. It's time to switch to BNC Cleaners.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the second half of the Knowing the Truth radio program. We're speaking with Daniel James Devine in the first half of the program and talking with him about mental health issues. We're going to talk about a similar subject here today, dealing with some issues related to the body and to the mind. We're talking about vaccines on the second half of the program today. On the second half of the program, we're joined then by Barbara Fisher. She's the president of the National Vaccine Information Center, and her long public record of vaccine safety and informed consent advocacy was featured in a 2011 award-winning film documentary entitled The Greater Good. And that's what I've actually entitled the program today as well, because I think both subjects fit underneath that category. It says this documentary tells the rarely heard stories of three families adversely impacted by vaccination. This important perspective on the issue of vaccine safety has been left out of the mainstream media debate for too long, and these courageous families show us that the time is right to think again. So thinking about vaccines, that's what we're looking at here today. And we wanted to get a non-biased approach to these things. And I think that Barbara Fisher is the place to go in order to do that. I'm going to have Barbara come on in just a second, but I wanted to play a little clip from that, the trailer from that documentary, because I think it's something that a lot of folks would be interested in.
2 years ago, a vaccine completely changed my life. I would do anything to get my life back to normal.
History teaches us how effective vaccines are.
Vaccines are the best choice for almost all children.
I don't think it's that black and white.
Vaccines in some way have been a victim of their own success.
The government, they're trying to protect society, but these motivations interfere with, safety issues.
In the last three decades, the numbers of doses of vaccines have more than tripled.
We are seeing a rise in the number of children with disabilities.
What if these shots that are supposed to protect kids actually hurt your child?
After the shots, I started getting sick. I've had two strokes, partial paralysis, partial vision, and I'm having seizures.
I would have never dreamt that this was a side effect of a vaccine. many of these have the potential to be neurotoxic.
The research is incomplete, and the certainty is not scientific.
A number of prescription drugs that have been licensed as safe have been found to be unsafe.
For the social fabric, it is better to insist on vaccination than to allow free reign.
The people who are approving the vaccines are taking the word of the pharmaceutical companies. The majority of vaccine research is paid for by the vaccine manufacturers themselves.
Only country other than New Zealand that allows advertising on TV for pharmaceutical drugs.
You can't sue the drug company that made the vaccine.
That's not science, that's politics.
Texas Governor Rick Perry has ordered that schoolgirls must get the Gardasil shot.
We can do this the easy way or we can do this the hard way.
The only thing that we oppose is forced vaccination.
Sadly, some people don't do what's best for their children unless it's mandated.
We're not zealots. We're not some people that are looking for a conspiracy or a fight.
The vaccine program, it's one size fits all.
We worry about the future.
You could have 30, 40, 50 different vaccines mandated and absolutely no accountability. You have a prescription for disaster.
I have a child, and then I follow the rules, and I damage this child. That's hard for me to understand.
I just want everybody to lay down their arms and figure out what is making them so sick.
Well, there you have it. That's the trailer about the movie that we are just referring to. And I have that. Maybe we can even get that on the website here as well. But I put that out, posted it this morning. I think that it's, you know, it's called For the Greater Good or The Greater Good trailer. And so you can just Google that and you'll find it for yourself. It won a 2011 award-winning documentary. Here to talk about the issue of vaccines in general from a number of different perspectives is the president of the National Vaccine Information Center, Barbara Fisher. Barbara, welcome to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Well, thank you for having me.
Barbara, let's start in that particular clip there. And I didn't have you on just to talk about the documentary, but it mentioned this idea of about people being forced to receive vaccines. One of the groups that I've done a little bit of reading about recently that is being forced to take a vaccine is some of the healthcare professionals themselves. There's a lot of nurses and doctors that have a number of medical professionals in the church that I pastor. Speak a little bit about where we're at with this issue. What is their right on this particular issue?
Well, it's interesting. I've written a commentary that I'm going to be publishing this week in the NVIC newsletter about this very issue. I have been defending the right to informed consent to vaccination for 30 years because I well understand that vaccines do carry risks. My oldest son was injured by his fourth DPT shot back in 1980, and I look at these courageous nurses. It's mostly nurses who are standing up and literally being fired for obeying their conscience, for defending their right to protect bodily integrity. And I think that this is an issue that really transcends vaccination. We have to have the right in this country to be able to follow our conscience, to be able to exercise, if we have sincerely held religious or conscientious belief objections to using one or more vaccines for ourselves or our children, we should be free in this country to be able to follow our conscience. And that's what these nurses who are being fired for refusing to get an annual flu shot, and there are many more vaccines that these nurses are being asked to take, and some of them have medical conditions that would endanger their health if they received more vaccines, but they're not being respected. Neither their personal beliefs are being respected, and their medical histories are not being respected because a one-size-fits-all approach is being taken by federal health officials and by medical trade groups that are funded by pharmaceutical companies.
So is the government actively attacking this right and actively trying to take away the person's ability to make a choice about vaccines?
Yes. What has happened is the public health officials who have committed to eradicating or controlling all infectious diseases through the mass use of vaccines have decided that they have to enforce this, what I call an ideology, really, through law. And right now, the federal government recommends vaccines for universal use, but it is at the state level, in our state legislatures, that the laws are put in place. So what's happening to the healthcare workers is the federal government recommends, the Centers for Disease Control recommends, and then in the states, a hospital that is either run by the state or is run by a corporation in the state can institute a policy that basically no shot, no job. And we have my organization, the National Vaccine Information Center, we're a nonprofit charity, been around since 1982. We have been working in the states with citizens who want to defend their informed consent rights. And we were able in Vermont and in California last year to defend the philosophical belief exemption, to also get a religious belief exemption in California when the legislature voted that anyone who files a philosophical exemption to vaccination would have to get a doctor's signature or a medical worker that they have designated as being okay to sign the form, their signature. But the governor did say you have to create a religious exemption in California that does not require a doctor's signature. So what this is coming down to is really, are we going to be able to have exemptions to the vaccines the government wants us to take? And right now there are 50 doses of 16 vaccines that are recommended by the federal government for children between the ages of birth and age 6. 69 doses of 16 vaccines if you go up to age 18. We've tripled the numbers of vaccines the government has recommended for our children in the last 30 years. And what we're seeing with this tripling of the numbers of vaccines our children are getting is we've seen an explosion in chronic disease and disability among our children. Today, we now have a 1 in 6 child in America diagnosed with learning disabilities. 1 in 9 has asthma. 1 in 10 has ADHD. 1 in 88 has autism. And 1 in 450 develops diabetes. Now, I'm not saying this is all due to the tripling of the numbers of doses of vaccines the children are getting. However, vaccines cannot be left off the table when we're examining why we have so many chronically ill and disabled children, which we did not have in the numbers we have today 30 years ago. So it's about, you know, a failure, I believe, of the government, the pharmaceutical corporations, and to really look at the potential side effects and the downside for a significant portion of our population who is not able to handle this increased vaccination. It could be setting them up, for chronic disease and disability. And, of course, we have other things that have happened. We have, you know, pollution issues. We have quality of food issues, but I think that lifestyle issues, but I think that we definitely need to take another look at vaccines.
I think it's important for people to understand, too, that your organization, the NVIC, and by the way, for our listening audience, their website is www.nvic.org. That's nvic.org. That it is kind of doesn't have a dog in this fight. It is just a trusted source for vaccine information. You're not anti-vaccine per se. You're just anti taking of vaccines without being informed about them or being forced to do that. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. We have always taken an informed consent position. We are educated consumers. We're educated parents. We are not doctors. We do not tell people what to do. In fact, what we advise is that you become informed about the complications of the infectious diseases, complications of the vaccines. Talk to one or more trusted healthcare professionals before you make a vaccine decision for yourself or your child. Because, you know, we're a clearinghouse for information, but we do oppose forced vaccination. We believe that we must defend the ethical principle of informed consent to medical risk-taking. That means that you, as an individual, have the right to be fully informed about the benefits and risks of a medical procedure and are able to make a voluntary decision about whether or not to accept the risk for yourself or your child. Mm. That's very different from being opposed to vaccination. We totally support everyone's right to have access to vaccines and to use as many vaccines as they want to. But we believe we must be free to make informed choices.
Of course, those that are opposed to that view would say, well, these things have to be mandated because it's for the common good, that if you don't get vaccinated and you have the flu, for instance, then you become a carrier and you're going to give this to somebody else, you would say?
Well, I think it's very interesting where that whole idea came from. It came from a Supreme Court decision in 1905, Jacobson versus Massachusetts in Massachusetts. It was actually a Lutheran pastor, Reverend Jacobson, who protested the law in Massachusetts at the turn of the century, last century, that he and his son should be revaccinated against smallpox when they already had a severe reaction to a previous shot.
Hmm.
Now, he was ordered to either be vaccinated or pay a fine. He instead decided to appeal, and it went to the Supreme Court. If he had paid the fine, today, likely, we would not be having the issue that we're having, in terms of forced vaccination. But he did go to the Supreme Court. At the time, there was a philosophy called utilitarianism that was very much in fashion at the turn of the last century. Utilitarianism says that for the greatest number, happiness of the greatest number of people, that is the basis for law, particularly public health law.
Mm.
And so the court decided that that people could be forced, the states could implement laws that could that would mandate smallpox vaccination. Now, what's happened since then is that was on one vaccine, smallpox vaccine, which is a disease that is in a very different category from some of the diseases now that are being brought under this mandated vaccination policy.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at smallpox and polio and those kinds of diseases in one category, but you look at something like hepatitis B, which is basically a sexually transmitted disease, a bloodborne disease, that this is being given to babies at 12 hours of age in the newborn nursery to healthy babies who are not born to infected mothers. It is being required for school. This is a hepatitis B you cannot catch in the classroom. It requires transfer of blood. It is an adult disease primarily among high-risk groups, particularly IV-injecting drug users. So, I mean, we have come, what's happened is the original concept where they were trying to control smallpox has now really given a huge market to pharmaceutical companies who want every vaccine that is licensed and that they market mandated. And we have a situation where Congress and the U.S. Supreme Court has removed all liability from vaccine companies marketing vaccines in civil court.
Hmm.
That means that you cannot sue a drug. If your child is injured or dies from a vaccination and you believe that vaccine could have been made safer, you cannot sue the company. You also are precluded from suing the doctor or the healthcare worker who gave your child the vaccine. This puts the issue of mandatory vaccination in an entirely different light in the 21st century.
Mm, good point, and I don't think a lot of people are aware of that, so let me highlight that. No liability for drug companies or doctors. So you get told that you have to take this vaccine, and yet there's no liability, there's no protection for you, there's no accountability. Let me ask you, we've got to talk briefly about what's in some of these vaccines. You were talking about 69 different doses there in one example. 69 different doses. What's in the vaccine, and Has it ever been tested when you're combining a number of vaccines together, especially when we're talking about this high a number of them? What are the health ramifications?
Well, the answer to your last part of your question is, unfortunately, no. In fact, the Institute of Medicine just came out with a report last week. We issued a press release about it. And what this Institute of Medicine committee did was they looked at what is the scientific evidence, how many studies have been done, methodologically sound studies have been done, to show that the current vaccine schedule is safe. And what they only could find 36 studies in the literature that actually looked at the safety of the current vaccine schedule, which allows children to be injected with 8 to 10 different vaccines on one day, which is a very different schedule than we had in the 70s and 80s when we didn't have so many children so sick. So I thought that was a very interesting finding by this Institute of Medicine committee, and certainly points up that we do need to do more and better science about vaccination. Vaccines, depending upon which vaccine you're talking about, can include a number of different ingredients. And those ingredients can include aluminum, mercury, both of which have been found to be neurotoxic. Now, certainly the government officials say, oh, well, it's in such small quantities that it doesn't hurt the brain. But there are other studies that show that very small quantities of aluminum and mercury can hurt the brain. We have things in there like lab-altered viruses and bacteria, which, of course, are in there to try to stimulate immunity to the disease. But what we find is that we don't have the kind of effectiveness that we need with these vaccines, such as the current flu vaccine. The CDC has just admitted is only about 60% at best effective. So, you know, there's a lot of myths that have surrounded the effectiveness of these vaccines. We have also in vaccines DNA from all kinds of cultures that they use. They've just approved use of dog kidney cells. Monkey kidney cells have been used to produce polio vaccines. We have a controversy about the use of fetal cell tissue to grow vaccines. There are some groups that are opposed to the use of those, and that's been a controversy. There's a lot of ingredients in vaccines. There's antibiotics in vaccines, and if a child is allergic to antibiotics, you know, how much do you really know about a newborn or about a young baby in terms of allergy to antibiotics? And yet these vaccines have that in them. They have MSG. They have phenoxyethanol. There's a number of ingredients that are quite controversial. So I think that it's so important that we become educated consumers and really look at the products that are being recommended by physicians, because these drug companies often do, I think, are not held to as high a standard as they should at the FDA pre-licensure. We need to have higher standards, because we need, as a public, we need to have more confidence in the pharmaceutical products that are being, in this case, promoted for use by government health officials.
Barbara, why are they being pushed so aggressively? I had an experience like you were talking about a few moments ago, where I was up at the hospital and a couple had a young baby and a couple days old, and the actual the intern or somebody came in there and wanted to give the baby the shot for hepatitis B. And so we were like, what? You're kidding me, right? Because there was other complications with the child already. But they were very aggressive about this. I drive down the street and I see some of the all the signs, you know, get your flu shot here and get your flu shot there. The news is all over this. Better get your flu shot and all of this. Why is it so aggressively marketed? Is there money somewhere here? Is there money to be made in this whole industry?
Oh, a multi-billion dollar global industry. There's a huge amount of money. And just on the flu vaccine alone, billions of dollars in profits. And so, really, as I was indicating earlier, what has happened is you now have government really serving as a marketer, as an advertiser for the vaccines that are produced by private industry. And it's called a public-private partnership between the federal government and these pharmaceutical corporations. Mm. And then there are medical trade groups that are also funded by pharmaceutical companies who then also strongly recommend that these vaccines be used. And again, our organization is taking the position that certainly these companies have the right to produce as many vaccines as they want to produce and market.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly the government has the right to recommend. But where we, I think we need to draw the line, because there are hundreds of new vaccines being created for every single disease, whether it's infectious or chronic, that you can imagine, or that is out there. There needs to be a line drawn between producing and marketing and recommending and requiring.
Mm-hmm.
That is where the line needs to be drawn, and I think the public needs to become more informed about exactly what's happening.
Barbara, down to just the last couple minutes, but I wanted to get in that you have a new NVIC advocacy portal, just very quickly, probably in under a minute. Mm-hmm. Give us a little synopsis of what that is.
You can join the advocacy portal. It's an online educational and activist tool for you through NVIC.org. We are working in the states to help you become a vaccine choice advocate so that you can educate your legislators at the local level and protect your informed consent rights in the states.
Hmm. Barbara, let me tell the listening audience that there's a ton of information out on their website. By the way, they are funded by donations. It's a 501c3. It's a nonprofit. And so there is no big corporations behind this pushing it. It's individuals just like you and me that are giving to get this information out. It's just all about information. The Bible says a fool judges a matter before he knows the whole of it. And I'm just surprised what people are willing to put into their body without any information whatsoever. I think we need to ask good questions. By the way, they have a page out here on the website that says if you vaccinate, there are 8 questions that you need to ask. I think that would be very helpful for many people in our listening audience. Again, their website is www.nvic.org. That's nvic.org. Barbara Fisher was our guest today. And Barbara, thank you very much for the work that you're doing there. I'd love to have you back on the program again to talk about some of these other issues in greater depth.
I would love to come back. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Barbara. Again, Barbara is the president of the National Vaccine Information Center. Your health, your family, your choice. What I like about their organization is that they don't promote and say, hey, don't get any vaccines at all. You know, we're telling you, don't do this. It's wrong for you to do it, anything like that. They're just involved in informed consent. They're against, as she was pointing out, the idea of mandating these things, even with Rick Perry. This is not a left issue or right issue. This is just an issue. It crosses both sides. I think the philosophy has changed of many of the medical professionals. So there is money to be made at it, but I think also that their philosophy of what they're being taught in medical school leads them to believe that the answer to many of these things is found in a pill or in a shot, in a vaccine, and I just don't think that that is the way to go completely the way that they're doing now. By the way, some of these 8 questions, if you're interested, am I or my child sick right now? Have I or my child had a bad reaction to a vaccination before? And so on as you go throughout these 8 questions. You may want to check into that, especially parents that have young children who are now beyond these immunization schedules, and the school will be asking. So you may want to look at these issues. The time to do it is now. Inform yourself. Find out about what the truth is concerning these different items, and then you can make an intelligent decision. Remember, that's not only true with this issue, but all things Jesus said, You should know the truth, and the truth will make you free. We'll see you next time, right here on Knowing the Truth.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Christian Talk 660, WLFJ Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson on AM 660, and now also heard on FM 92.9.